Welcome to Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. Each week, we explore down and dirty ways to stop awfulizing, catastrophizing, going down the rabbit hole, and moving through all the craziness that is happening right now. We're here to create a community of like-minded people as we give you tips, tricks, and techniques for keeping sane in an unhinged world. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Grossberg, one of your co-hosts for the podcast, Keeping Your Shit Together in a Stressed World. And I'm here with my co-host, Michelle Post. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, Scott. Hello, everybody. Welcome back.
Can you believe we're at the end of July already?
No. Where did the 7 months go? And, what the heck?
Yeah. And I got to tell you, I was looking back, getting our episodes together and ready for today. This is our 177th episode.
Wow. 177 weeks we've been doing this.
which means I think we missed our 3-year anniversary, but
darn it. Did we? All right. Well, it would be in March. Yeah, March 2023.
So anyway, happy 177th 177th episode to you and everybody else.
Yay, thank you for tuning in.
We are in the midst of summer, obviously, here.
In the United States or Northern Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter where you are, right?
Well, in Southern Hemisphere, it's winter.
And our audience size continues to grow, so thank you all for being part of that. And looking to see if we have any new countries here.
Do we have any, since I just mentioned the winter in Southern Hemisphere, do we have anybody in the Southern Hemisphere? Are the Philippines in the Southern Hemisphere? This is going to show my geography.
Well, we've got Australia.
Ignorance. Oh, Australia. Yes. Yeah. So they're in winter.
And we've got Australia, and then going in the opposite direction, the Netherlands. That's certainly not the Southern Hemisphere, but
right.
But number three is Canada, your home country.
Oh, country, tis of thee.
Isn't it amazing what we can steal as Americans?
Yes.
Out of curiosity. Uh-huh. Canada's part of North America.
Correct.
Canadians, because we obviously call ourselves Americans here in the United States.
Right.
But do Canadians consider themselves Americans?
No, just like Mexicans do not consider themselves Americans.
The reason I ask that is that there has, as has been for most things in the world today, a push about not for some people, for United States citizens not to call themselves Americans, because it eliminates
the South and North America. Yeah, Southern and Northern America.
So it's like, I don't know that we're ever going to get through that one, but I just was reading that the other day. So know if Canadians consider themselves Americans, and we're in the United States.
Right. No. And you know, the entire South Americans, I don't think anyone from, I have friends from Uruguay and Argentina and Peru and Colombia and Venezuela, and no one would consider themselves Americans either, even though that's South America. So yeah, I guess because it's in the title of our country, United States of America. We could have called ourselves United Statesians.
Okay. All right. Before we get to our topic today.
Yes.
Talk to me. What do you want to talk about today?
Well, this is my life hack for those of you that can or are willing to get a credit card that gives you miles towards airlines and a separate credit card that gives you miles towards hotels. I highly recommend I don't like carrying a balance. I always pay it off every month, but funneling as much as you can of your living expenses through those cards so that you earn points. I cannot tell you how they bailed me out this weekend. So,
so you can tell us.
Oh yeah. How much they bailed me out. I can't speak highly enough.
There you go. So tell me more.
So, you know, there are quite a few crazy shenanigans going on in airlines these days with flights getting canceled. And this has been par for the course for several years now. So we were on a small regional flight that got canceled with no other flights leaving for 3 days, which means I would not be here today. I would be on an airplane trying to get home from New Orleans, which is an 8-hour drive or a 1-hour flight. And I would have been stranded there for 3 days because my regional flight has a policy online that when they cancel for whatever, for operational reasons, their fault, doesn't matter, they do not book you on another airline. They book you on their next available flight. Okay. So read the policy. So I quickly used my points to book us a non-direct flight. I won't say the airline, but I quickly used my points and rescheduled us. We sadly, due to weather, which people will not change your, will not put you, they'll change your flight on major airlines when it's due to weather, but they won't put you up in a hotel or pay for your meals when your flight is canceled due to weather. So due to weather, we were going to get stranded in yet another city overnight and have to pay out of pocket. And I quickly was able to use my points to book a nearby airport hotel using my points overnight so that we could get home. So a one hour flight journey turned into many, many, many hours, but thankfully not a lot. You know, last minute airlines flights are very expensive. And so the fact that I was able to not only book myself, but my partner using my points was very helpful so that we weren't out of pocket for those really expensive last minute flights.
Yeah, we actually have a credit card that does exactly the same thing, although it combines air miles and hotel and car. So it's all of it packaged together. But interesting that you talk about having to find flights, because there's a huge controversy that is raising its ugly head again. This is not new, but it's raising its head again for some of the reasons that you've just mentioned. And that's that people cannot get decent flights. They cannot get where they need to go at a cost-effective way. And so there's a thing out there called skip lagging. I don't know if you've heard of it or
not. Skip lagging.
Or hidden city ticketing is another way to do it. Uh-huh. By the way, I first came across this, not in the air, but on the sea. My wife and I were cruising, and I wanted to spend more time in Paris. And then what we had booked, because it was a round trip cruise. And we decided that we were going to disembark in the port outside Paris and just stay there. We weren't going to take the cruise the rest of the way. Yes. And I was not asking for a refund. I wasn't getting it. I was just like, we paid for the cruise. There's your money.
Right.
Knock your socks off. You have an empty stateroom. They weren't going to let us off the ship. We had to go through so much red tape and get special permission from the port authorities with the warning that you understand there's nobody there to service you. You will have to walk to the train terminal. There will be no cars. There will be nothing here because it's not a sanctioned stop.
Uh-huh.
I finally said, well, what if I just get off the ship and don't get back on?
Mm-hmm.
Then they reminded me that they had my passport. It eventually all worked out.
Okay.
But skip lagging, for those of you that may not know otherwise, it is sometimes less expensive to book a flight
and not take
that has a stopover in the city you actually want to go to, and then you just don't get on the plane again to go to the rest of the destination. Now, I'm going to tell everybody right now, it is frowned upon by every airline out there. This is not something new. And in some cases, I believe it's actually against the terms and conditions or policies of the airline. I don't know if all of them actually have stated you can't do this.
Yeah.
But I was fascinated as an attorney reading just the other day that apparently a teenager was detained at the airport for getting off the plane. They looked at his driver's license and saw that the stopover was where his driver's license was from, and they actually detained him at the stopover. And it's like, seriously? So really? There are risks to doing skip lagging, but it's such a challenge nowadays. And you know, I'll add one more tip, because I'm a magician and in the entertainment industry. what made a lot of news was a colleague of mine. You know, as a magician, you travel with a lot of stuff. And I have been stopped any number of times
because you travel with a lot of weird stuff.
Exactly. two quick little travel tips. Friend of mine came up with this wonderful insert, for lack of a better way to put it. It's a piece of paper, he's printed on it, and he puts it in his luggage, his carry-on luggage. I'm sorry, his checked luggage. And when you open it, it says, "Dear TSA and Customs." It's addressed to them. I'm a professional magician. I travel with a lot of weird stuff. This is my profession. This is how I earn a living. Please handle this with care, et cetera, et cetera. And there's more to it. And then,
assuming they read English.
There's that. And so I have done similar things. And, you know, it's hit and miss, obviously. Every now and then you get the little tag that says, "Hi, your suitcase has been opened by." And up until now, they've been very polite about it. But a colleague of mine, I loved this traveling stage magician. They travel with a lot of stuff.
A lot.
And as the plane is departing, you know how they back out of the gate?
Yes.
He takes a picture of his case with all of his stage stuff sitting on the tarmac. And it is the only thing sitting out there.
Oh, no.
The plane's not going to go back and get it. Now, here's the interesting thing. He thankfully had Apple AirTags in the suit, in the case.
Oh, good.
Because the runaround that he got over where his case was.
I know.
And he actually tracked it. It made news everywhere. You guys can go look it up. So, you know, next
Apple
time,
tags is Apple another. Apple tags,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, set an Apple tag. In fact, when we were traveling in New Orleans, somebody's husband went missing. And he accidentally left his phone with the wife. And so she couldn't call him. But thankfully, they had an AirTag in his wallet.
Seriously, I've heard about tagging your pets, but not about.
Yeah, they had an AirTag in his wallet, and then saw that he was just back at the hotel and fine, and stopped worrying, and you know, figured they'd meet up.
You know what? Speaking of this, and then we'll get into the show
that
today.
That could be dangerous.
Speaking of just everyday stuff, I cannot emphasize enough how important I think it is to chip your pets.
Oh, chip your pets. Yes.
Right. So we're talking about AirTags. I know, but it's a nice little lead in to, we just had our neighbor, pardon me. She was babysitting her daughter's dogs. They're not hers. They're not from this area. And the dogs got out and everybody is looking for them. And we get on next door and you post all this stuff. And thankfully the dogs were chipped. Somebody found the dogs, took them to the local kennel. They ran the chip and then called the daughter, who's in Samoa at the moment, but they got a hold of her. And I, again, it's just, if you care about your pets, right? Obviously 4th of July, which we just passed, a lot of animals run away. But they're going to get out. It's very hot right now. Animals are going to look for water. They're going to look for shade, et cetera. Don't leave your dogs in the car. Don't leave your dogs out in the heat. This chip actually allowed the dog's recovery, both dogs' recovery within a few hours.
Wow. While we were traveling, because there was a lot of downtime watching random news, speaking of dogs in the car or accidentally forgetting stuff in the car, hopefully not your kids in the car, there was a news thing where they showed scientifically in 99 degree, 100 degree weather, with the door closed, within about 30 minutes, your car goes up 30 degrees. You'll be up to 130 degrees.
Oh, easy. Yeah.
Easy. So with all the heat waves around, your car can be just a lightning rod for heat increase that will, even with the windows down, will not be good for any animals or pets or chocolate, anything that melts. Don't leave it in your car.
With that, shall we move into our topic today?
Yes. And picking back up from last time, since we were giving out a lot of hacks around pain management, one of the ones that I didn't get enough time to describe was just really quickly, for those of you that deal with ongoing pains or aches, a good sports medicine friend of mine told me about icy hot original patches that you can wear on your back or your knee or your shoulder or your elbow, and they stick to you. They will get hot though. So if you don't like the effects of cold, hot temperature changes, that may not be for you, but for someone like me that really can benefit from them, if I'm going to do a lot of walking or hiking or physical activity, they work wonderfully for my back and my knee.
So one of the things that I didn't get to was a product by the name of Tiger Balm, which I discovered a while ago. And they as well have these patches.
Oh, they do.
That holy crap.
Do they get hot?
Oh my God.
I know. So does Icy Hot.
It's like, oh my God. Now, I want to warn everybody. I use the Tiger Balm. These are Tiger Balm patches that are in there, but I use the balm. Any of these products, any of these topicals that you use, make sure you smell them first.
Oh yes, your partner may not like the smell.
some of them, and I don't care that they call them a mild smell,
mild,
right?
You
smell them, because I'm going to tell you that some of the best products out there. Do you remember when you were a kid, mom would put the Vicks vapor rub?
Yes.
And there's a reason it worked. And we've joked before, right? I wound up, I'm like a target for mosquitoes.
I am too.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so I went online and I did my little due diligence, and I found the balm that you put on that is guaranteed to repel mosquitoes, and it will repel dogs and people. It may even repel you
to use it.
It works.
Because also nothing, good for your friendly neighborhood introvert.
Nothing wants to come around you, right? I did want to mention
traveling in tight spaces.
Yeah, I did want to mention one last thing, and that is elevation pillows. Now we talked about body pillows. These are elevation pillows, and they're usually the memory foams and things like that. My wife happened to get me a really cool one, of course. It's like Tetris in a pillow cover, and it all folds up in different formations. You can raise this, and it's got a headrest if you want to flip it around and whatever else. But, you know, when your doctor says to elevate your leg or your arm or your shoulder or your back, whatever, these elevation pillows, there are all kinds of different versions of them. Don't wait until you need them. This is another one where it's like, just get one, and you'll see how it helps with the blood flow and the circulation and the pain management.
I like that. For those of you that might have acid reflux as you age, because that's a lovely thing that happens to women in their 40s, an elevation pillow that helps you sleep at an elevated level can help with acid reflux as well. So thank you for that tip.
Sure. All right. Mm-hmm. Today we're talking about why physical pain is so personal.
Yes.
And we kind of came up with this jointly, no pun intended, because of what I was going through with my surgery and the fact that I had never experienced pain like this ever post-surgery. And Michelle certainly has gone through her stuff. And as we age, I and others all go through our stuff, right? You wake up in the morning, and it's like, that didn't hurt before.
Yes.
And then I've always loved the story of George Burns in his later years, how he'd walk around and he'd amble and he'd barely move because he hurt so bad. And then right before he'd walk on stage, it was magic. Showtime magic. And so I thought it might be interesting for us to literally start with just a discussion of pain to begin with. And it's,
yes,
you know, you and I aren't doctors, but I have discovered through my own post-surgery travels and journey that there are different kinds of pain.
Yes.
And I want to start with the discussion. I think everybody's heard of a placebo.
Yes.
Right. Now, placebo is Latin and it means I please you.
Uh-huh.
Now, placebo, of course, is it's sugar water in some cases or a sugar pill.
Uh-huh.
The cool thing is it actually works. Even when you, placebos work, even when you know they're a placebo.
Right.
What a lot of people don't know is there's something called a nocebo, which is the exact opposite of a placebo. So where a placebo pleases you, a nocebo is I hurt you. And the reason I bring that up is there's something called nociceptive pain built around the same thing. And this is pain that comes about and it hurts you and it comes about from damage to your tissues. Though this nociceptive pain is where you start having the throbbing, the sharp. I've always said it feels like I have a headache, and I couldn't describe it anyway else other than it feels like I have a headache in my knee.
Throbbing.
Right.
Yeah,
and it's just I can't even describe it any other way.
Right.
That's damage to my body. They amputated my leg and put it back together again.
Right.
You know, silly me finding out that taking me apart was easier than putting me back together. So it's usually external injury. That is pain. And I think, Michelle, you'll agree that pain usually, until we normalize it and then we start coming up with stuff in our head about it, pain is usually there to protect us.
Yeah, to alert you that something is wrong with your body that you need help with. Yes.
Yeah. And then when it's there to protect you, that usually shows up as what they call acute pain.
Yes.
Right. So you
acute. It's short term.
You hit your something that is generally described as pain that you have for less than 6 months.
Okay.
It can be minutes, hours, but it's not long standing.
Okay.
If it's long standing, you then move into what's called chronic pain.
Okay.
And that's a different, that's where it just wears on you. It's like it starts tearing you down. Mm-hmm. And now we move into pain management and now we've got opioid problems and, you know,
I usually describe acute pain as much shorter than 6 months. So except for when you are in recovery from a trauma, right? So like post-op, the pain may last 2, 3, 4 months or so, but like when you burn yourself on the stove and you remove your finger, the pain goes away, right?
Yeah.
Or you get a headache and the headache goes away, or you break a bone. And as the bone is healing, there may be some, but it may last longer than a day or a few hours, but it's usually not quite a 6 month long, unless you're dealing with some kind of injury or illness that is connected with chronic pain. So I usually see pain as something that lasts. It's almost consistent for several weeks.
I think this is consistent with our show today. And that is something that I've learned. It's that nobody's experience of pain is the same as the next person.
It's personal.
So you may take 6 months. I may take 2 months.
Yes.
You may have a day of injury and I sit here and wallow in it for a week. You know, it depends what it is, right?
So I want to mention,
go ahead.
More in terms of, you know, my first placement was at a chronic pain clinic. So I'm thinking of how does the medical community define chronic versus acute pain? Like we wouldn't see somebody post-operation for a knee replacement and see them at a chronic pain clinic, because that is pain connected to the injury and the surgery that makes sense and is healing in its own time, versus chronic pain is something that kind of never goes away beyond the time of normal healing. So that's that. I know pain is personal, and we'll get into like how it feels in our body. But in terms of the medical community and who would be eligible to be seen at an actual chronic pain clinic versus your outpatient physical therapy, your surgery, your doctors, your, you know, hospital surgeon, you know, those are all acute injuries versus chronic pain.
Yeah. So I just looked up on the Mayo Clinic, for example, and they've got it at 3 months.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And anything over 3 months, and they're likening it to stuff like arthritis, fibromyalgia, persistent headaches, IBS, et cetera, et cetera.
So exactly.
Again, there's a perfect example of two different major health industries saying one is 6, 1 is 3.
Right.
And the last one that I wanted to at least make sure that everybody understood was something called neuropathic pain.
Yes.
And that's damaged, as they explained to me, I have angry nerves.
Angry nerves,
right? And so this is where you have, I'm trying to describe it to the doctor. And I said, it feels like somebody has taken 1,000 razor blades and dumped them into my leg. So it could be stabbing, burning, shooting, sharp pains like that.
Yes.
And those are usually, I'm sure there are certainly others, but
yeah.
So you've got acute, chronic, neuropathic, and nociceptive pain. Mm-hmm. The challenge becomes, you know, what do you do when it becomes so personal, right? Mm-hmm. And I've always loved in working with people with suggestion and languaging and sometimes hypnosis, I've always loved that it starts with what is the story of your pain? Mm-hmm. And I think a good doctor, a good healer, a good caregiver starts with asking you, tell me about the pain and, you know, what does that bring up for you? What does it mean for you?
Yes. Can I say, like, for those of you that are struggling with your medical community, I'm going to give you some tips, whether you're dealing with acute or chronic pain. I will tell you that there are words that transcend the medical community, and then there are stories that don't transcend the medical community and drive them crazy. So you can tell all your stories to all your friends, but you want to be able to describe your pain, whether it's chronic or acute, on a scale of 0 to 10. Okay. Like, they'll ask you, what's your pain rating right now and in general? And you want to describe it in terms of burning, stabbing, itching, throbbing, aching. So those are the 5 words that doctors use for differential diagnosis. There might be more, but if you can describe when you're going, and you want to remember, depending on your clinic where you're going, a doctor may have 15 minutes to see you or an hour to see you, most likely 30 minutes if you're lucky. So the faster you can come in ready to say, my pain is at a 3 right now, but on an average day, it'll spike between 2 to 9. And overall, most days I'm hitting 6. Like, if you can describe like that, and it is burning, it is aching, it is throbbing, it's shooting, it's stabbing. If you can describe it in that language, you will get better care.
I agree.
So
that's been my experience. I mean, it's, I've got some residual IT band issues from them taking me apart and putting me together. And the surgeon is now following up on this IT band issue with exactly the same thing. He wants a pain journal. He wants to know the amount. He wants to know what it feels like, where it is. And he's
frustrate you.
And he's like a fighter pilot, right? It's like, just give me the freaking target.
Give me the data. The other thing that's helpful, because in preparation for today, I was like, how do we, before we go into the stories about it, how do we help people, like, what's inside my body is not inside Scott's body. So how does he know how Michelle feels? So I tried to look up, you know, can you rank things in terms of general knowledge? So many people associate childbirth with pain. Not all women have painful childbirths or terrible childbirths. But the most painful part is usually from the baby's head hitting the spine of the woman. So if you're a woman and you've given birth, you can use that as a ranking to help you, right? Or other people will say that a kidney stone or a gallstone attack can be as bad as childbirth, depending on the woman's childbirth, or one of the worst pains you can experience. So if you've had that and you can describe, I've had a gallstone attack, that was a 10, this is an 8. Or most recently, I've never had a root canal, I thought I was having root canal pain. A lot of people understand what that pain looks like. Then cluster headaches, interestingly enough, are ranked as more painful in general than a migraine or than what's called a spinal or a temple headache. So that kind of helps you. Also, shingles, I've never had shingles. Shingles are considered one of the most painful experiences for many people. Trigeminal nerve pain has been considered one of the highest levels of pain for people, which was something they were trying to diagnose me with. And guess what? Post-surgery recovery is up there on the highest level. And guess which surgery is the most painful?
Having researched this, I can tell you that behind two spinal reconstruction special surgeries, total knee replacement is the number one.
So, total knee replacement is number one.
Yeah.
And then you've got your back injury, degenerative disc disease after that, your major joint osteoarthritis in hips, knee, or shoulder. Sickle cell disease is right around there. Complex regional pain syndrome. Endometriosis and UTI, those are painful. A broken bone, cancer bone pain. So that gives you an idea of if you've had those experiences and you're going in for diagnosis because you don't know what's going on, but you've had those other diagnoses before, share that. Like compared to my, compared to giving birth, this is an 8, right? So that'll help you with your diagnoses.
Yeah, and I will tell you the interesting thing for me as I listen to you do this, right? So I'll just use me as a quick example because it's so personal. When you do total knee replacement, at least my surgeon never wanted me to use a cane. It was always use a walker and then stop using the walker. We have you up walking stairs within 2 hours of surgery, right?
Wow.
It's like, oh my God. Wow. And then the pain medication wears off, but that's a whole other issue. So the interesting thing was there are times when I limp and there are times when I don't. So Michelle, right before we went on the air here, I was just talking to a sports massage specialist that I've started going to help break up some of the scar tissue and loosen up the IT band. And before that, I had been doing the standard physical therapy. Both of them have said the same thing, only this new guy's personality is right in line with me, right?
Oh, good.
Very, very cut and dry, very to the point. It's like, Scott, this is what you got to do. Here's the rule. And then it was like, and stop limping. And in my head, right, this is the story we tell ourselves. It's like,
there you go.
Okay, but I've had knee replacement surgery, blah, blah, blah. This is what it means to me. And his response was very, very straightforward. He said, look, your brain has pain receptors in it.
Yes.
Your brain is afraid of feeling pain.
Yes.
You have felt pain before.
Yes.
But I just went through and worked on you with this and looked at you and blah, blah, blah. He says, you're not feeling that pain anymore. Your limping is a direct result of you anticipating pain.
That's right.
That doesn't exist.
That's right.
Stop limping.
That's right. And physiologically, what we see when we limp is that we're overusing one side.
Yeah.
Which causes our body to go out of alignment, which causes pain. And so he's right in the sense of like, you also need to work the muscles equally so that you're not creating other problems, right? We get back pain on the right side. So we start walking, leaning to the left. Now all of a sudden our left side's overworking and creating problems for us because it's overcompensating to avoid feeling pain. So beautiful that he said that to you.
And so here's the interesting thing that I have found throughout this journey. Remember I talked about nociceptic pain and blah, blah, blah. So there are nociceptors in your body. And I love the way it's been described in some of the articles I've looked at. And that's that these are smoke alarms in your body. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing though, right, is that having never experienced anything like this, and I say this to all of you who have not had a lifetime of arthritic pain or had a lifetime of whatever pain you're experiencing. But for those like me, who it's like, I've never experienced anything like this.
Yeah.
The story I tend to tell myself.
I have
pain. And in some days, because of the neuropathic problems, it was 20 out of 10. It was that bad. My brain immediately went to, it's going to be like this forever.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to change. And that kind of mindset, this is what I was saying, right? That kind of mindset is not going to help you heal. No. And it's not going to help you get better. And so it would, I think, have helped me pre-surgery. I didn't do it. And it certainly has helped me post-surgery. And I invite all of our listeners, do your homework. Find out what's actually the general rule, as Michelle's been talking about. What is it that you can expect? Doesn't mean you will have it. Don't be in denial over this stuff. Don't take things to mask a problem. And then if you find yourself in a situation where it's chronic and it's not going away, then to find a medical or alternative medical provider who fits your personality, your style, and is going to make things better, if not stabilize it, and assist you. And I've got to tell you, just having a support system has helped me. Just having a physical therapist, or now having a sports masseuse, being able to get a hold of my surgeon, or at least his staff, when I need to, right? It's like, you know, I personally wanted to get off the medication as quickly as possible.
Right.
That's just horrible stuff. Is at least at my reaction to it. His medical staff, very straightforward, saying, you know, you've been put under anesthesia. And yes, that too takes time to wear off, flush your body out, et cetera, et cetera. And it's been a grand learning experience of what pain means for me. So I again, get to know your body. And the other thing is to understand that there's a whole psychology to pain.
Yes. Yes. And speaking of the psychology to pain, when people, if you find that you're in pain and then you're struggling to manage fear and depression and sadness, or your grief is exacerbated, it makes sense. Like, how many people do you know who are happy-go-lucky when they're sick? I don't know many people that are happy-go-lucky when they have a common cold, let alone when they're dealing with chronic pain in their body. Yeah. And recently, this is not political, but what I saw recently is CNN wrote an article about some laws that they are debating about putting in effect. And Joe Biden came out saying, hey, look, people, mental health is health. Mental health care is health care. What's the difference between a broken leg and an emotional or mental breakdown? And we really need to stop the disparity between the two of them and how they're treated by our insurances differently, and they're treated by our healthcare system differently. And how, because pain so affects mood and mood so affects pain. We keep thinking that we have this mind-body disconnect, but we have a mind-body wholeness. And I don't know what it feels like to be inside Scott's skin. I only know what it feels like to be inside Michelle's skin. And that is why pain is so personal.
I've got to tell you that there's an emotional and cognitive component to pain.
Yes.
That's in addition to the physicality of it. And
yes,
again, I'm going to just hand it to my surgeon's office. I don't have a clue how they are trained or whatever. but one of the post-op visits, I was with his nurse, his physician's assistant, and I was explaining what I was going through. She didn't even look at my knee. We spent the entire half hour that I was with her talking about the emotional and cognitive component to pain. And then she shared some of her personal stories with surgery and pain. And it's like, oh my God, I'm actually not crazy.
Yes. Yes. Why do we think, like, if physical pain makes emotional pain worse, why do we not understand that that emotional pain makes physical pain worse. They are connected and therefore need to be treated holistically. Which just is like what? You said, your brain was telling you a story that it's going to hurt to walk on that knee.
Yeah. So again, very much like we've talked about with meditation and mindfulness, when you're in pain, I know it's not the greatest time, but maybe as a postmortem, and being very general with that term, maybe as a postmortem to the pain episode, you can ask yourself, what's the dialogue going on in my head?
Yes.
When the pain is happening, I can tell you right now, my wife will tell you that when Scott is sick, the end of the world is coming.
Right. You're not a happy person.
I am not. So you can imagine what I've been like with this. Mm-hmm. Right. And I've had to come to terms with the dark and twisty place that I go to when my angry nerves, I would just stand there and cry. It's like, yes. I would stand up, the razor blades go down your leg. I couldn't do anything. Right. And I had having never experienced anything like that.
Right.
I've had to come to terms with, what does this actually mean? Is it momentary? Right now it's gone away, but it didn't feel like it would at the moment. And this is where getting a support system can help you to realize there is a light at the end of the tunnel in a lot of cases. Right. And for those of you who are in a chronic situation and it becomes, there's actual pain, or you've told yourself that there's actual pain, however that works, to get the support to help you rise to the next small step so that you can start getting through this.
Yeah, I agree. You know, one of the things I realized I've probably learned this about me before, but I realized it again in the last few months, is when I'm sick or I'm in pain or my mood is down, but usually it's more physical for me these days than it is emotional. I really like being by myself. I don't want anyone, even my closest loved one, Brian, I don't want to see him in my broken, I don't want him to see me in my broken spaces. Mm-hmm. When I used to live by myself and I was single or divorced, if I didn't do the dishes because I was having a bad day, or I didn't make my bed because I was having a bad day, nobody knew it except me. And when you live with somebody, they know when you're not taking a shower, when you're not making your bed, when you're not cooking for yourself, when you're not doing the dishes every night. And I'm such a keep my shit together kind of person. Like, I really like to be that way, even when no one's looking. That the worst thing I want to do is to lose my shit and have someone else witness it. I don't like that. And so for any of you that can relate to that, I get it. I get it. And yet just talk to your loved one. Make sure they're okay, not feeling overburdened by what they're picking up around you. Make sure they also understand you're working on whatever you're working on to get better, and that it's not always going to be like this. And that they also are brought into the stories in your head and can help you combat them.
And I think this is really important because, again, what I've been learning and my experience through all of this is it's so important for those of you to take charge of your own pain care.
Yes.
With your physician, your surgeon, your alternative medicine folks, whatever it happens to be, and let them know what you expect, what has your life been like pre-treatment, and then what do you expect your life to be like post-treatment?
Right.
And it helps them adapt what they're doing if they're great providers. Now, the interesting thing for me, and again, I just real quickly, because we're coming to the end here, you know, my surgeon flat out, first thing that he came in, he says, where's the pain? What's it look like? You know, the whole, everything Michelle said. and then it was, tell me what a typical day is for you. That was his question. And he says, okay, what do you want to be able to do post-surgery? And of course it was like, I want to do it all again. I want to be like the $6 million man. And I want to run 100 miles an hour and blah, 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 blah. Right. And he's looking at me and he's saying, well, you're obviously aggressive, aren't you?
Of course.
Now, post-surgery, things are not going as quickly as I want, because I said, I want to be up and ready pain-free 2 weeks after surgery. I literally said that.
I bet you did.
Right? Change the car tire. And it's not happening. And I'm sitting in physical therapy, and I had a wonderful physical therapist. I'm sitting in physical therapy and I'm watching other people. You can tell when someone's had total knee replacement, folks, right? We all know each other.
Yes.
I can see it. And this is no disrespect to any of you. I'm telling you what I saw, though. These are people who I don't think ever exercised in their lives.
Yeah.
And it was pretty obvious. They may have been doing their PT stuff at home. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted to get on my exercise bike and I wanted to go walk 12 miles and blah. I'm dying in pain. I'm literally killing in pain. And I'm listening to these people talk to each other and they've, oh, this has been a breeze. This is easy. I'm going to do the next one. It's like, what the fuck am I doing wrong? That's the story I told myself. Oh my God, did I break it? Can I break it? Can I, you know, I don't want to revisit this again. First, the physical therapist.
Right.
And then the surgeon, two different visits, because I'm telling them the story. And they both said to me, kind of wink, wink, nod, nod, Scott, look at the physical inactivity of these people. Why do you think they're not in pain?
Yes. Yes.
Right. And so some of it also is, again, just expressing to your folks, your support system, how you want to be post whatever it is, and walk them through what a typical day for you looks like. I do shadow boxing, and I told that to the surgeon ahead of time. And he said, okay, I'm going to take that into account so that you can take that stance, because it twists your knee, take that into account post surgery. Right. And damned if last week, by the way, I started doing the shadow boxing again.
Oh, really?
There's no pain at all.
I'm so excited for you.
Again, you want to get back to your activities.
Yes.
And not tell the stories. I'm never going to do this again. It was very important for me to talk to this sports masseuse, by the way, and tell him what I could do pre-surgery, what I can't do now. And he said, well, what would you like to be doing?
Right.
And he said, you know, except for the limitation of the device, he said, I'll get you back to where you want to be. It's like, oh my God, that's actually doable. So these are the kind of support things that you want to get for yourself, even if you're in chronic pain, right?
Yes.
And to help you get the drama out of take the drama out of trauma. I love that. There's our new tagline.
Yes.
And I know it's not everybody, by the way, but I'm going to also say this. We've said this a lot. And I know, Michelle, you're a huge proponent of this, right? If you're not getting the kind of health care that we're talking about, if you can, get a new one.
I cannot tell you what it was like for me to get a second opinion on the most within 5 days, I was better. And I had been suffering for about 3 weeks. Within 5 days, I was better.
Yeah. So that kind of brings us then to this has almost been a three-part series.
It has been.
the next session is going to be recorded, our next podcast with you. And we're going to talk about something right up Michelle's alley, and that's the role of therapy in managing stress.
Yes.
And it'll be very interesting because I've had to explore all of this as well myself. It's like, what the hell does all this mean? Mm-hmm. And again, folks, I'll be the first to tell you, I think Michelle, you'll second this. Shit happens to everybody.
Everybody. It's part of being human.
And that's what the whole purpose of this show is, to help you manage that stress.
That's right.
And give you some ideas. With that, thank you all for listening. I guess I should ask Michelle, was there anything else you wanted to add?
Mm-mm. Just remember that mind-body connection and do your best to treat all of it holistically.
Very, very. I second that. Thank you all for listening. Please remember to like, subscribe, share this on your favorite podcast platform. I thank all of you who are our new listeners and as we grow. And with that, be well. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. If you like our show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate our broadcast, and leave a review. The podcast is for general information only and not intended to be legal or mental health advice, nor the formation of a lawyer-client, nor therapist-patient relationship. Stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you for listening.